Board of Appeals, thank you for coming this afternoon. Final case on our calendar today is, the final oral case is A18-0940, Michael Adebayo versus State of Minnesota. Hopefully I pronounced his name correctly.
Yes.
Counsel for appellant will have 15 minutes, followed by 15 minutes for counsel for respondent, and 5 minutes for rebuttal. If you could please state your name and the party you're representing, we would appreciate that. And the podium is adjustable, so if you want to adjust it, feel free to do so. And you can proceed when you're ready.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Jason Nielsen. I'm here representing Michael Adebayo, an individual who, during the course of his criminal proceedings, believed himself to be a time travel experiment. The standard of review for this court is outlined in Coipers v. State. Legal issues are reviewed de novo, and this court has a broad review of law and fact. We are claiming that Mr. Adebayo suffered ineffective assistance of counsel in his criminal proceedings and are seeking to vacate his conviction and withdraw his guilty plea due to the fact that neither his counsel, the court, or prosecutor sought to have a Rule 20 investigation done into his mental competency.
Was there any request for Rule 20 before he underwent the plea?
No, Your Honor.
Are you arguing that his attorney that did the sentencing should have requested the Rule 20, or the attorney involved in the plea as well?
I'm arguing that both should have. Rule 20, Section 3, Subdivision 3, I apologize, I believe states that is the duty when there is doubt throughout the course of the proceedings in the criminal court that doubts of the defendant's competency, that a Rule 20 must be done, not may be done, not should be done, but it must be done. The proceedings, I would argue, are not terminated or complete until sentencing. While his public defender was Ms. Koski. At the sentencing, there was a substitution. I guess Ms. Koski was busy, and another attorney from the public defender's office handled that matter. It's my understanding, I don't want to speak for them, but Ms. Koski stated that she had some issues with his irrational thoughts, but she did not believe him to be delusional or that he believed there was a conspiracy against him. I will agree that there's nothing in the evidence before the sentencing that evidences that he believed there was a conspiracy. But as to his delusional state of mind, in the PSI references several times, at least twice that I can recall off the top of my head, Mr. Adebayo claiming he's a time travel experiment. Now, for Ms. Costa, this is the toughest part for me to reconcile the district court's decision. How can it be said that Ms. Koski had no idea that he had delusional thoughts when he was claiming to be a time travel experiment? Either someone missed the reading, either the court prosecutor or defense attorney, that he's claiming to be a time travel experiment, or they believed a time travel experiment person could be real.
But wasn't the recommendation from the PSI for a mental health evaluation?
Yes, it was.
And that's what the district court did, in fact, is order a mental health evaluation for him, right?
But not before sentencing. Someone should have, my argument is, at that point, he's exhibiting, and even during his plea, he said, I wasn't 100% myself that day.
Right, but we're kind of...
The day of the incident.
Yes.
Not the day of the sentencing, or
correct.
The plea, I mean.
Correct. And so that raises a question. I apologize, Your Honor.
Well, and that's a good clarification from Judge Cochran. That's actually from the statement of what happened at the incident, the theft itself.
Correct.
But that's one statement, and that statement alone, and even the other statements, may be indicative of mental health issues. And I think all the parties agreed that there may have certainly been some mental health concerns. But that is first of all, it's a separate issue from competency. And second, even as I think you highlight in your brief, the judge and the lawyers are not mental health experts. So you have somebody here who is testifying fairly coherently. And, I mean, was it reasonable for all the parties involved, the judge, prosecutor, and defense attorneys to say, well, yeah, we agree he should probably have a mental health evaluation, but not pick up on the signals of whether there's an issue for competency, especially when the district court was questioning him and he was responding back. He knew what was going on. He seemed to know what was going on.
And I think your Honor's last, I guess, little correction there, seemed to know what was going on, is leads to the point. State v. Ecker, which the Supreme Court has said, leading questions that elicit yes-no answers are disfavored. Here, that in the transcript, you'll see there's a lot of yes-no.
Right.
I understand. Is this true? It's true. He was just parroting.
Well,
there was
that is true to a certain extent, counsel. There certainly were a lot of leading questions during that, but there was also I'm trying to think of how the district court phrased it, but district court was actually questioning whether or not he was truly pleading guilty or not. He was being a little evasive in terms of what actually occurred, and then when the district court questioned whether or not he's actually pleading to the charge, he quickly responded back without even his attorney jumping in and provided a response of what he did. So, and that was a statement from him. That wasn't just a simple yes or no answer.
Well, he said, oh, I did. Definitely then. I did. I did take the phone out of the individual's hand. I did steal his phone.
Yeah.
I mean, that, I think in the prior part, he is when he's saying, I was not 100% myself, so I did act in a more egotic, more overbearing, egotic way. And he was kind of rambling at that point. And then...
I think he was kind of struggling with the word egotistical.
Right.
Yeah.
And the court says they can't accept a guilty plea if they didn't know what they're being charged with. And he says, oh, I did. I definitely did. I did take the phone out of that individual's hand. He did say that, but he did say previously he wasn't 100% himself that day. So that raises questions as to the mens rea of him the day of the act when he was, I believe the police reports and descriptions of the video state he was dancing around on the light rail. He believed an individual was his friend. He made a lot of actions that seem not normal. And I understand, as the state court, I pointed out in its brief that a lot of defendants have mental health issues. Assuming arguendo that's correct, I don't think the state referenced any specific studies, but yes, individuals have mental health issues. What types of issues and the severity of the issues vary greatly. There can be depressed defendants, multiple personalities. This individual,
What specific facts would have caused the attorney to have a doubt as to his competency to require the Rule 20 exam. The district court in its order focuses on the fact that there isn't expert testimony to that effect. So how should that determination be made then without the benefit of expert testimony? And what facts support your argument?
Your Honor, thank you. First, the description of the event that he was dancing around on the light rail, he just took, not that he took someone's phone. He had stated he thought he was playing a game with friends that he apparently did not know. He then, I believe, stated that all Asians look alike. He then claimed to be a time traveler. He claimed to be a confirmed being of the earth, man versus wild.
That was in the PSI?
Yes. And then his aunt had consulted with the investigator for the PSI, and she had informed them he had been hospitalized previously for mental health issues, that he was not taking medication, that for the past year, he had been behaving erratically, wandering the streets, not making sense. Even Ms. Koski says sometimes she didn't understand him. The fact that the reporter in the PSI stated his affect was flat throughout is key. Flat affect is an indicator of serious mental health illness, such as schizophrenia. And when, just to finish your question, what indications, the court indicates rightly that, yes, we did not have, a report from an expert, I guess if you were asking about a psychological expert, we do reference several NIH studies regarding how long schizophrenia takes to develop. We did not have a doctor present at that time when he was pleading guilty to evaluate him.
You maybe referenced the NIH studies at?
In the brief to the Court of Appeals.
But those are outside of the record. They weren't before the district court, correct?
Correct. And
well, at the time of the plea, I mean, according to what was in the PSI, I think he was hospitalized April 13 through 17, 2017, and then he pled guilty on July 28, 2017.
Correct.
All right. And was there anything in the record about this prior hospitalization for mental illness?
Yes, Your Honor. It was in the PSI.
All right, but that was prepared after he'd already pled guilty. I'm saying at the time of the plea, was there anything brought before the court, or did anyone know at that time that he'd been previously hospitalized for mental illness?
I can't speak to the discussions between Ms. Koski and the respondent's aunt. I know I believe Ms. Koski did state in her affidavit, I could just check real quick, that the family was present for all the hearings with Mr. Adebayo and the aunt, who had previously expressed concern, and the family had repeatedly expressed concern about Mr. Adebayo's mental health, that he'd been behaving erratically for approximately 1 year prior to this event occurring. I do know that.
So, is it the same judge, the same judge that took the plea that heard this matter?
I believe so. Yes, Judge Oddsby. Yes, that heard the post-conviction matter.
Yes,
yes it was. And.
But at the time of the plea, there's nothing in the record that indicates one way or another that anyone involved in this matter knew, or the defense attorney or the judge knew about this prior hospitalization. Am I correct? Is there anything in the record?
At the time of the plea, I do not believe so. I will double check for my rebuttal time. But even if it was not, it was known prior to sentencing. As the court's aware, it is much easier to vacate a plea prior to sentencing than it is to post-sentencing. And the Rule 20 provision states that at any time during the proceedings, doubt arises. That PSI should have created doubt. Ms. Kosky said she didn't believe he was having delusional thoughts. The PSI clearly establishes he was, that he believed he was a time traveler. Whether or not that happened, he believed that when the incident occurred, when he took the cell phone, that's something that should have been inquired by a mental health professional arose.
If the Rule 20 was requested after the plea but before sentencing, how would that proceed procedurally then?
Sentencing could be continued for a medical examination to take place, a Rule 20 to take place, to see if what was the extent and severity of schizophrenia that he had, to consider the medical reports and evaluations that had been done during his hospitalization. What types of medication had he previously been prescribed?
I'm sorry, let me clarify. If he had the Rule 20 exam after the plea and the Rule 20 exam found that he had schizophrenia, what would be the appropriate procedure at that point?
Then an inquiry would have to have been held as to whether or not he was suffering from schizophrenia and his delusions and the voices that we now know he was hearing in his head, and if whether or not they suggested he take the cell phone and thus negate mens rea, and he would be not guilty of that crime by reason of incompetency.
Okay. All right. Well, your time is up. You'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Good afternoon. May it please the court, counsel. I'm Assistant Ramsey County Attorney Adam Petras, and I represent the respondent in this matter, the state of Minnesota. As building on something that Mr. Nielsen just said, I truly believe that sadly many, many criminal defendants who are either found guilty or plead guilty suffer from mental health issues. And indeed, this may be why they committed a criminal act in the first place. But Rule 2001 and this state's case law do not require a Rule 20 exam in every single one of those cases. Some of appellant's comments that are quoted in the PSI are odd and nonsensical. I completely agree with that. But that does not mean that appellant was unable to consult with either his plea counsel or his sentencing counsel, or that he didn't know what he was doing or what was going on in these proceedings.
Well, can I? You had a question.
No, go ahead.
I mean, if this information had been relayed to the court and to the defense attorney before taking the plea, wouldn't it have been sufficient to request a Rule 20 if everyone had known?
No,
I don't believe so.
Why
not? I mean, if you've got someone who's delusional and they've just been hospitalized just a month or so earlier.
Well, in response to that,
for mental health issues, I mean, wouldn't that at least raise the question?
It wouldn't, and that's because competency is different than mental health. And in terms of what was even in existence at the time of the plea in late July 2017, what only thing that had happened at that point in time is that brief hospitalization 3 months before at Regents, that's including that four-page Regents Hospital discharge report, and that identified two different disorders. And there's been no claim whatsoever that those two disorders that are identified in that discharge rendered someone unable to understand what was going on, unable to participate in one's defense. Nothing else that's cited could have existed at the time of the plea.
Well, except the aunt says, I mean, it's unclear whether counsel knew about this, but in the PSI, the aunt says that he had been irrational within the past year, and she does not believe it's because of chemical use. The aunt noted that she recently took the defendant to the hospital because he kept ranting about things that make no sense.
And so, I think that's the hospital visit that's referenced in the discharge report from Regents Hospital.
Right, but I guess what I'm trying to say is by the time of the sentencing, counsel and the court were aware that within the past year, he'd been displaying irrational behavior and had been ranting about things that make no sense. And so wouldn't that, in combination with some of the other facts that that appellant has cited, be sufficient at the time of the sentencing hearing to raise a doubt as to whether he was competent?
I don't believe so. And I would point this court to the Tolbert decision that I cited in my brief. And in that case, the individual was hospitalized less than 1 week before he pled guilty. He had schizophrenia before he pled guilty. Everyone knew that. The attorneys, the judge, and yet no one requested a Rule 20 in that case.
Shouldn't have one been requested, though. If somebody's suffering from schizophrenia and...
That was precisely the issue that was raised on appeal, and Judge Cleary wrote for this court that the district court did not err in not ordering a Rule 20 based on those facts.
Right, but here what we've got is, I mean, it seemed like there are a lot of red flags at a minimum. There are a number of them before the plea, but certainly at the sentencing hearing with the PSI, with the information from the aunt, with even the attorney acknowledging some strange behavior. But in particular, in addition to that, when the statement at the incident where I was, when he said I wasn't 100% there, I wasn't 100% myself, I mean, but when he was asked about his future goals, he told the PSI agent that, quote, I am a confirmed being of the earth, a said being and travel experiment. It's a different motion of advancement, man versus wild. I mean, that there's so many aspects of that that are so disconcerting. Shouldn't that have raised a red flag to say, wait a minute, let's take a time out here. Maybe let's take a step back to make sure that this person is actually competent to proceed with sentencing, and it may have raised some issues of whether or not he was even competent to provide a plea. I mean, it seems like as more time went on, more information came available that it was very disconcerting, to say the least, certainly mental health, but why doesn't this support an argument that there at least should have been a competency hearing held just to make sure?
Well, those are some of the comments attributed to appellant in the PSI, but he made many, many more that were completely lucid.
Right, but you can go in and out in terms of lucidity. It's not a constant state of being one way or
I completely agree with that, and that's why I think that... Actually, I apologize, Judge, I interrupted.
Right, but, I mean, somebody can go in and out of a lucidity. So, I mean, they can be sound completely coherent to 1 minute, and the next minute they're making statements that make no sense whatsoever.
And that's why the Minnesota Supreme Court in Bauer as well as in Bonga made clear that the demeanor that is personally witnessed by the players involved, by the attorney, by the trial prosecutor, by the district court judge, who, yes, did preside over the plea, the sentencing, and this post-conviction proceeding, the demeanor that they witness and observe is a very relevant consideration when determining that. They read the PSI. That obviously gave rise to sentencing counsel's argument for a shorter than standard probationary term and requesting the ordering of a mental health evaluation.
Right, but it's not just the duty. It's a duty of all parties, the district court judge,
right,
the prosecutor, and the defense attorney. And mm-hmm. I think the issue here really is whether the defense attorney, having worked with this person and herself noting some odd comments that he made.
Well, I want to be specific because I feel that maybe it was not exactly precise what's written in the affidavit from sentencing counsel, which was Exhibit 4 down at the post-conviction proceeding. And she writes, I'm quoting verbatim, I did notice that Mr. Adebayo behaved somewhat strangely and would occasionally make comments that did not seem to be logical during my representation of him, period. That is the only thing she writes in her one-page affidavit that suggested that this wasn't someone functioning at the highest level.
Right, but that's yet another data point to add on to all of these other ones that would indicate that she, of all people, having interacted with him and having read the PSI, having heard the statements from the aunt, having seen what occurred, his statements during the crime itself, aren't those enough signals to say, wait a minute, this...
Well, not according to her, because she says that if I had known what I've been told about what happened months later in the immigration court proceedings, I would have felt differently. But not only did she not know that, there was no way for her to know that, because the defendant, during all of her interactions with him, was not presenting that way.
Let's jump ahead a little bit. So now we've got the post-conviction, the petition before the post-conviction court. The post-conviction court doesn't even hold an evidentiary hearing. And now the post-conviction court does have all that information, including what was stated and what occurred in the immigration court.
Well, I mean, for the standard for granting an evidentiary hearing at the post-conviction stage is the district court judge must assume the truth of all of the factual allegations that are made in the petition, that are made in the affidavit, and any other supporting documents, not to make any credibility determinations. Just assume everything that the petitioner is submitting is true. And that is precisely what Judge Ospie did here. The second prong
of this... But don't you have to view the facts in the light most favorable to the defendant?
You do. I guess that's what I was trying to say. Everything that the defendant submitted is true. So definitely in the light most favorable to him, taking him completely at face value. Was there a question, Judge Hooten?
Go ahead.
Because I'm just reviewing the testimony that was even given at the time of the plea, and I can see why if you're listening to a defendant, you may view that testimony differently if you don't know that mental health history and do not know of the mental health diagnosis.
There was no mental health diagnosis other than those disorders and the region's discharge that had been made at that time, and I would strongly discourage this court from retroactively applying mental health diagnoses back in time.
No, I understand that, but that gets to my question because, you know, we now know that there's psychosis and there's some delusional thought here. He describes that he thought he was playing a game with someone he knew from high school on a bus and that he was just playing a game and he didn't, you know, that he was going to give the phone back. He didn't mean to harm anyone. He thought he was back in high school. And then the judge actually stopped him at that point and said, well, you know, we can't take a plea from someone who claims they're innocent. Then he immediately says, well, okay, you know. And he immediately said, okay, I did steal it. But it was kind of inconsistent with what he had given before. While that just alone may have been enough for the judge at that time to accept the plea, in light of all this history about him being what you learn later, being a time traveler and everything else, doesn't she have to review that plea in light of this history?
I think she did in her post-conviction order. And just to clarify one point, okay. The time travel experiment, the only reference I'm aware of anywhere in the record is the phrase travel experiment, which is included in the PSI one time. If there are other references in the record, I am unaware of them, which obviously means that did not exist at the time of the plea. And going to Judge Reyes's question earlier to both counsel, competency is fluid. So even though the individual, Mr. Adebayo, made that travel experiment comment at some point shortly before sentencing, that does not mean he was not competent on the day of sentencing, nor does that mean he was not competent at the time that he entered his plea several months before.
But there was no evidentiary hearing on this, right? So,
correct.
How is the judge making this mental health determination with regard to something that had occurred earlier, now that she's got all this information, how does she make that assessment without some I would think, maybe expert testimony?
I would disagree that Judge Ospie made any sort of mental health determination herself. As I think everyone.
No, I know, but she has to determine if his mental health was such on the day he pled that he was in,
I think what the Minnesota Supreme Court required in Bauer is that in determining whether a district court observed adequate procedures to ensure a defendant's competency, the district court does not determine whether he or she, the defendant, that is, was competent to proceed at that time.
But that's not the issue. What we're talking about is at the post-conviction hearing. Now, the information was limited at the plea hearing. More information at the sentencing hearing. Even more information at the post-conviction hearing, including what he's suffering from, including the fact that those symptoms can be exhibited much earlier on.
Well, that actually is not in the post-conviction record. That the site to the National Institutes of Health website appeared time.
So. But you still have the aunt who said he's been suffering from this for the past year. He's been suffering with mental health issues. Now you've got all this information, and you only have this one-page statement from the attorney. Why wouldn't an evidentiary hearing, and any doubts as to whether or not you hold an evidentiary hearing are in favor of holding one, right?
Correct.
And like you said, we have to look at the information like most favorable to now appellant. Why wouldn't an evidentiary hearing be held just to have that testimony, have the testimony from the lawyer or lawyers that were representing him to say, this is what was going on, this is what I saw, and really make sure, because ultimately, aren't we trying to just make sure that a person's right, a defendant's rights are protected and that they're not pleading guilty at a time when, now that we have more information, we realize he may not have been competent?
I guess there's no way of answering in a proceeding held right now, say a Rule 20 examination was ordered in March of 2019, Abadabayu's state of mental health was in July of 2017. That's simply not possible because of the fluidity of competency. So all this court can do is to ensure that the adequate procedures did take place. With response to, I see I'm running out of time, but response to your question about all of the information that was provided to the post-conviction court, I'm agreeing that everything included in those 64 pages of medical reports that were provided by the Department of Homeland Security, all of that can be true. There is nothing in there, if you comb through them, that indicates that the diagnosis that were being made where it all could be postdated or put back in time. That is something that's suggested in the website that was cited in the brief, but there was nothing before Judge Ospie. I realize my time is out. Can I finish answering my question, Judge Cochran?
Yes.
There was nothing before Judge Ospie suggesting that whatsoever. So based on all the information that she knew at the time, including how this individual's mental health had substantially deteriorated after sentencing when he was taken into custody by federal immigration court authorities, that there was nothing that indicated that could be retroactively applied back many months before to when the plea hearing happened.
The aunt's testimony, 1 year.
The aunt would be the one piece, and I think that went to the basis for the mental health evaluation that was ordered at sentencing. Obviously, Mr. Abayu didn't even like that, but that was ordered against his wishes because he was making the point at sentencing when he was speaking on his own behalf that his family does not have a good handle on how he's doing.
And even in that statement he made about his family had some...
He used the word efficient when he shouldn't have. I think there's probably a better word to use in that point, but he is a 22-year-old, as the record makes clear, that maybe does not speak in court professionally.
I have one further question for you. On page 17 of the judge's order, she states these statements show a concern for mental health issues that should be addressed but do not rise to the level of obvious incompetence. Did she apply the correct standard there? Because isn't the standard whether there's a doubt, reason to doubt competence, not obvious incompetence?
I agree that the standard is what you just said, based on that language of subdivision 2 or 3 of Rule 2001. I don't believe Judge Osby applied the wrong standard. If you look at her 18-page order in its totality, I regret on her behalf the use of that phrase, obvious incompetence. I agree that is not the standard that should be applied, and I don't believe if you look at the totality of her order, that is the standard that she did apply.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, too.
Thank you. Okay. First, regarding the issue of the standard, I would also like to just add, and I believe counsel cited Bauer. I submitted a letter pursuant to Rule 128.05 informing this court of the Minnesota Supreme Court's decision in State v. Curtis, I believe it was, which states on page 12 of that decision, if competency is disputed and proof of competency is absent, the court must find the defendant is not competent, and furthermore that the burden is on the state to prove competency.
That's after a hearing's been
correct
ordered, right? Or I mean an evaluation's been...
No.
I mean, I'm sorry, I'm misspeaking. Anyway, it's, go ahead.
It's during...
I'm not sure how it's particularly relevant to this case where the request is different than it was in the Curtis case. Procedurally, we're in a different posture.
Yes, yes, we are, but I just wanted to make that aware to the court. And then counsel also noted that Judge Otsby had observed a substantial deterioration, I think the quote was, in Mr. Adebayo's condition before, when he appeared in the transcripts from the immigration court versus when he appeared in her court. The transcripts from the immigration court were, as Judge Reyes, you noted, competency is fluid. We don't know if he had substantially deteriorated, or maybe because of the situation he was having different mental health issues, maybe because of the in-depth nature of the immigration proceedings, the hearings when Judge Wood in the immigration proceedings kind of started questioning him more and more when he observed some erratic behavior on the and words on the part of Mr. Adebayo, that he became more agitated and more agitated as the proceedings went on. And also, as you noted, the statement in just to finish that out, an evidentiary hearing would have been necessary and should have been ordered upon noting this substantial deterioration in his condition, given the fluidity of mental health issues. Perhaps the brevity of the hearing before the sentencing court and the plea court didn't agitate him to the point of starting to elicit these hallucinations and delusional thoughts that he had in the longer interview in the PSI, and as time and stress builds, you know, my armchair psychology, I guess, that it further eliciting his delusional thoughts. And so I think at the bare minimum, an evidentiary hearing should have been ordered. another theme, I guess, that came up is these rules are in place to protect defendants. Yes, mental health issues abound in society, and I've sat in criminal courts from New York City to here, and I've seen defendants with lots of mental health issues, but here we have someone who is claiming to be a travel experiment, who thought someone was his friend. Someone should have stepped in and said, wait, there's a red flag here, red flag there. They're accumulating and growing stronger and stronger and stronger. And when you get to the immigration court transcripts, it's like, whoa, this person has serious, serious health issues. And at least an evidentiary hearing could have been ordered to consider those, because now you have a defendant who, because of this plea, was stripped of his status of DACA, was deported from the United States, and now is locked in a room in a house in Nigeria, not allowed to go out. And that's what his future is now today. And that is manifestly unjust. And that is what happened to this poor man in the proceedings, where no one stepped in and said, hey, are you okay, to protect him? And at a minimum, we afford the defendant some protection, I think. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, counsel. The matter was well argued and well briefed. We will issue our opinion within the 90-day statutory time frame.
Thank you.